Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, The Remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today. Sudanese continue with protests to demand for change.
The demonstrator has a specific demand that to support the democratic transformation, and also they want to send the message to the military not to seize power more than expected time.
And two factions of the SPLM-IO continue fighting in Upper Nile State.
Yesterday at my time, we had a bullet of the heavy gun. I have been shot by the general that way.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Tens of thousands of Sudanese took to the capital, Khartoum, Thursday to protest recent political developments in Sudan, including tensions between military and civilian partners of the Sudan's transitional government. The long-brewing tension has worsened in the aftermath of a military coup attempt last week and a terrorist incident earlier this week. Nabil Biagio spoke with Khartoum-based journalist and editor-in-chief of the online Khartoum Today newspaper, Mohammed Al-Fazari, who says there is fear that the military will not hand over power to civilians at the end of their term.
The demonstrator has a specific demand that to support the democratic transformation, and also they want to send the message to the military not to seize power more than expected time. As you know that by November, the period of the military will end, so that they should hand over the power from military to civilians. So people think that some means that the military will not hand over the power to the civilians. So they just went out street once again and to demonstrate to show that the civilian government is the choice of the Sudanese people and no retreat from this demand.
And of course, this connects to recent political developments in Sudan. There was a coup attempt last week and a terrorist incident this week where five officers of the General Intelligence Service were killed. After the failed coup, military and civilian officials traded accusations and harsh statements.
Yeah, sure. The exchange of accusation between both sides and the inflammatory statement also fuel the situation and make this demonstration to make both sides come back to the tracks again. I mean the tracks of partnership, which is when this government is a civilian military government. So the message is about there is a fear from the future of Sudan's people going to unknown future. And also, there is some security challenges regarding the terrorist group that has been captured in the south of Khartoum's capital city. Also, raise so many concerns that the government should step forward and to address such challenges.
Yes, speaking of addressing terrorist challenges, Prime Minister Hamdok called for beefing up security. He called on the police and all other security forces to be vigilant and all of that. But what is the government doing exactly to address the issue?
Yes, the government now to going to change some regulations and also try to give more equipment for the functions of the police and the security in charge of terrorist attacks in Sudan of anti-terrorist group, because there is some criticism made on the government, those people were not well equipped. I mean that is the weapons and they use, so the terrorists use very advanced weapons, and also they killed about five people in a few hours. So they think that there is shortcoming, so the government is going to change all the mentality that's using the way of how to counter terrorism in Sudan. As you know that we don't have any previous experience in dealing with such a group. I think this is because there is no any terrorist activity in Sudan here. The only incident that happened about 25 years ago in one of the mosques at Durman, the twin city of capital city Khartoum. But ever since, we have heard nothing about such a terrorist group. That's why people deal with that accident is very indifferently.
Yes, but the motorcade of Prime Minister Hamdok was attacked with explosives in March last year. And even the government even launched an investigation, but we don't have the findings.
Sure. The committee was formed, and since that time, the committee did not send the report. And we hear that there is mutual information between Sudan and FBI teams visit Khartoum and try to fact-exerting and ask about many information from Sudanese police, and went back to Washington, and we are still waiting for the final report, but still there is no more details about that incident that is targeting the Prime Minister and in attempt of his assassination.
The recent incident where General Intelligence Service officers raided a terrorist cell in Jabra in Khartoum and five of them were killed. The government said it arrested 11 terrorists of foreign nationalities and four got away, escaped. What do we know about the identities of these terrorists and how they entered the country?
There's no more information. The only information that you have, I think we share it together. But some rumor here and there and be in social media is about one Egyptian and one Nigerian and other Arab nationals, but no specific information from official authorities to confirm such information.
How do you know that there is still investigation underway? So we don't have free information about how they came to Sudan and what's about their plan. But we hear that from the security services that they have been here enter and they've been following over 6 to 8 months, and they are belong to two nationalities or more. I think it's Egyptian and one from Nigeria. And I don't have more information about that. But it needs time to verify. Because, you know, the statement of the security service has not yet mentioned any nationality. Yesterday, there is some news reported that Egypt has demanded Sudan to hand over the involved in the incident. So this is also to confirm that the nationality is Egyptian among them.
That's Muhammad Ali Al-Fazari, journalist and editor-in-chief of the online newspaper Khartoum Today. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio this past hour. David Malpass is making the first visit to Sudan by a World Bank president in more than 50 years, calling it a sign that the country's integration into the international community is progressing in strides. After meeting with Prime Minister Abdel Hamdok, Malpass says Sudan is making a transition from a violent situation, from a situation of shortages, to a situation that is gradually improving. He urged patience as the country makes the transition to democracy from decades of autocratic rule and tries to reduce poverty, boost economic growth, shrink the massive budget deficit, and reduce shortages of essential goods. Sudan recently cleared its overdue payments to the World Bank, giving the government access to new types of international financing for the first time in nearly 3 decades. While in Sudan, Malpass is giving a virtual address to the annual meetings of the financial institution and the International Monetary Fund. The commissioner of Oror County in Jonglei State says villagers are in shock after fresh clashes involving forces loyal to first Vice President Riek Machar and a breakaway faction in the area on Thursday. William Gadjat, the military spokesperson for the breakaway forces, confirms the fighting in a statement seen by South Sudan in Focus. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Tang Chatim, the commissioner of Uror County, says that fighting erupted between the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Army in opposition forces and First Vice President Riek Machar, an faction loyal to General Simon Gadwich, on the outskirts of Piri Payam on Thursday.
Yesterday, my time, we had a bunch of the heavy guns. I have been shot by General Gadwich faction. And when we had them, they told us that there is some people came and attacked them. But yesterday morning, we identified the case, and we got it like that in the thigh. But we had those of Machar, they told us that there is no people are going to attack them.
Commissioner Chatim says the clashes in the area have left residents in fear. He urges the fighting factions to move away from the villages to avoid harming civilians.
The authority of the rural county, we hide them due to tie of IO, and we tell them that we don't want you to be in Piri Payam because here is just a Payam, and I've been living by Payam and Teta. And there is no military barracks in Piri. What we encourage them that because you are the son and daughter of this area, you those of IO supporting Riek Machar, you can go to Moton. And we talk also with those of IO supporting General Gadwich, and we tell them that you go to the Rosas.
Chatim says the fighting continued toward UI town and that details about the casualties remain unclear. William Gadjeth, the military spokesperson for Gadwich faction, confirmed the fighting. In a statement South Sudan in Focus has seen, he said, quote, SPLA-IO would like to announce the fresh attack to the public that Dr. Riek Machar's forces, led by Major General Michael Walinyak from Matot, launched an unsuccessful attack on the SPLA-IO forces under the leadership of Interim Chairperson and Commander-in-Chief General Simon Gadwich earlier this morning at Piri at 2 a.m. Gadjeth says his group was able to repulse the attack without providing details about casualties. Several phone calls to Lampol Gavriel, the SPLA-IO spokesperson, went unanswered. However, Simon Hoth, the Jonglei State Law Enforcement Minister and the Deputy Chairperson of the SPLMA-IO in Jonglei State, confirms the fighting in Piri, saying their forces dislodged fighters loyal to General Gadwich.
Yes, I have a clue about it. Initially, there are some hillmen who are now from White Army, which is led by the Colonel Tunyanga Kal. And then they say they will be, they are now supporting the Kitwang Declaration. And then they have been told, okay, if you are the part of the Kitwang, and then you leave the area of Piri, okay. And then when they convince to leave the area, but in reality they influence the person who is the driver of tanks. This is where they thought that they have a power, and then they have been dislodged up to now. Yesterday, and then they are now in the area called Pater.
In August, General Gadwich, the former chief of general staff of the SPLA-IO, said he had ousted Riek Machar from his position as leader of the SPLMA-IO and declared himself as the interim chairman of the movement. Nicholas Asom, the special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, recently expressed concern over the division within the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Army in Opposition, or SPLMA-IO. He said it would hamper the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Peace monitors in South Sudan have been concerned about the stalled implementation of the 2018 peace agreement, especially the implementation of the security arrangements. A unity government to prepare the country for elections in 2023 was formed in February 2020. But so far, critical aspects of the peace deal, such as security arrangements, transitional justice, and institutional reforms, are behind schedule or stalled. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
15 African countries have succeeded in fully vaccinating at least 10% of their populations against COVID-19 by September 30th, a goal set by World Health Organization in May. However, that leaves two-thirds of the continent's 54 nations extremely vulnerable to the deadly disease. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Several countries have performed extremely well. Seychelles and Mauritius have fully vaccinated more than 60% of their populations, and Morocco has inoculated 48% against the coronavirus. Richard Mahigo is coordinator of the Vaccine Preventable Diseases Department in the WHO's Regional Office for Africa. He says those countries were able to achieve and even exceed the 10% target because they had a steady vaccine supply available. He says most had the money to strike bilateral deals to procure vaccine in addition to the supplies delivered through the COVAX facility.
Unfortunately, 70% of African countries have missed this important milestone to protect their most vulnerable, with half of the 52 countries with COVID vaccination program in Africa have inoculated less than 2% of their population.
That compares to an inoculation rate of 50% or higher in wealthier countries. The WHO reports monthly vaccine deliveries to Africa have increased tenfold since June. However, it notes more than double that amount is needed to reach the 40% immunization target of Africa's 1.3 billion people by the end of the year. Mahigo says COVAX is identifying countries that do not have the means to procure vaccines and put them in the front of the line to get enough doses to cover the most at-risk populations. However, he says pledges of doses by wealthier countries need to materialize soon.
Starting next week, we are sending multidisciplinary teams of international experts to countries that are struggling to scale up their operation so that we can drill down and identify the bottlenecks so that the local authorities and their partners can remedy them as they continue to roll out the vaccine.
On a more positive note, the World Health Organization says COVID-19 infections in Africa dropped by 35% to just over 74,000 last week, with more than 1,700 deaths reported in 34 countries. Despite the declining numbers, the WHO warns people must remain vigilant and continue to adhere to proven public health measures to save lives. Those include the wearing of masks, regular hand washing, and physical distancing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Ethiopia expels United Nations officials. Find out why after the break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Ethiopian government says it is expelling 7 top officials with UN humanitarian agencies. The government accuses the officials of meddling in the country's affairs. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said he is shocked by the accusations and that the UN is talking with Ethiopia to allow the officials to continue with their work. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Through its Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ethiopia's government on Thursday announced the expulsion of 7 high-ranking officials with UN humanitarian agencies. The government accused aid workers of interfering with its internal affairs without elaborating. Those expelled include Adele Koda, UN Children's Fund representative in Ethiopia, Sonny Nyegabula, monitoring team leader for the UN Office High Commissioner for Human Rights, and five officials with Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, including Peace and Development Advisor Kwesi Sankolot. The government has told the seven to leave the country within 72 hours. The Horn of Africa nation is facing internal and external pressure to end the 11-month-old conflict in the Tigray region. Rights groups and aid agencies have documented abuses, rape, looting and blockade of humanitarian convoys. In June, the African Union launched a commission of inquiry to look into human rights abuses in Ethiopia. Speaking in an online news conference Thursday, Letitia Bada, Human Rights Watch, Horn of Africa chief, said African investigators need support from all 55 countries on the continent.
The commission of inquiry for the moment has not received support from the African Union. And I think here we're talking about both political, financial, logistical support. I think it's absolutely key that the AU at the highest level is providing that to the Commission of Inquiry.
The Ethiopian government launched a military operation last year against the Tigray region after months of disagreement over security, politics and the future of the country. The US government has threatened to sanction individuals seen as responsible for conflict and for blocking food, medicine from reaching those in need. The Ethiopian government says it is allowing aid food to pass, but aid agencies said authorities need to do more. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda says, Nabil and John, I was happy upon hearing of the reopening of South Sudan-Sudan borders for communities living along border lines to trade freely. Congratulations to the two governments. Mal Adao Mal in Bortown says, Hi, Nabil and John. All the rapid killings across the country clearly indicate we're heading nowhere. What bothers me a lot is that none of the conflicting individuals is winning the conflict militarily. I strongly agree that we have land but not an independent state, and when people talk of elections, I just laugh at them. Shame on us. Jacob Dior Machweng from Euro Lake State says, Congratulations to the governments of Jonglei State and Pibor Administrative Area for prioritizing the reunion of abducted children and women with their families. May this initiative continue to wipe off the spirit of abduction that has been a culture to the two sisterly communities. My last congratulation message goes to journalist Winnie Chirino. She is my favorite journalist to celebrate this year. Her charming voice attracts every listener, especially me. Binyason from Polorinya Settlement, Obongi District in Uganda says, Hi VOA. My concern to the leaders of South Sudan is that each one has to think twice on the lives of the innocent South Sudanese who are suffering in the refugee camps, because you need positions. Otherwise, without people, who will you manage? Peter Thonachol from Yambio says, Good evening, VOA. My condolences to the family of Kuj Muga. Very sorry and sad for the killing of Brigadier General Abraham Chol Kuj in Maridi County and his brother Mabior Kuj. May their souls rest in peace. Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 Bortown says, Dialoguing among the warring parties is the best and lasting solution to the prolonged abduction of children and women across Greater Jonglei and Pibor, an embracing of peaceful coexistence in the area. Lamru Lomaria in Juba says, Hi VOA. Pains me when I hear people say there's already peace in South Sudan, which I have never seen, where there is totality of corruption in every situation. The international community should stop giving their support to South Sudan. And this fan says, Hello VOA, this is Robert Nyombe within Bidibidi Refugee Settlement. The unlawful detention of people because of someone's case can't make sense, thanks to the program. This listener says, Hello, I am Deno Dan. Where shall we express our constitutional rights? Just demanding a commissioner of rank to step down. It brought chaos. What a dangerous place to live in. Let's wake up out of the deep sleep, South Sudanese youth. Mading Malwal Alwong from Malakal says, The system of this government has made it very difficult for young people in South Sudan to develop their potential and talents because they don't support such innovation. Rather, it oppressed them. We are very frustrated with the way our own government oppressed the policy in the private sector. To my fellow young people, let us keep the fight going for a better South Sudan, a country where the economy itself will start employing young people. Alafi Benson Stephen Elinoma from Ofua 6 Rhino Camp Refugee Settlement writes, "Hi Nabil and John, thanks for the show. The only thing we want this time is peace in South Sudan. It's our passion to make South Sudan a glorious nation." And someone who calls himself John from South Sudan, Juba, says, "Shame on South Sudan government. You have finished stealing oil money, now you're stealing the loan from IMF. Yet civil servants go without salaries for 4 months. Peter Johnson in Yei says, "The cries and suffering of the innocent and poor citizens of South Sudan will follow the families of the South Sudan government leaders and the officials of IMF, and the citizens will hold both accountable. IMF and other international financial institutions giving loans to South Sudan need to be investigated. They seem to be getting unusual kickbacks. Shame on both of you for stealing from the innocent poor citizens. God will judge you one day." And Dude Majok from Rumbek says, "Hello VOA. My thought to the issue of a man who took somebody's wife is that he must face the law, because a family of about 5 children can't be taken while a man paid his own wealth to the parents of the girl." Gatiek Wichar from Cairo, Egypt writes, "Hello John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I'm very proud of Vice President for Gender and Youth Cluster Rebecca Nyandeng Garang for representing our nation before the 76th session of the UN General Assembly in the strongest image. I am impressed by the fact that Honorable Rebecca has addressed all the concerns of South Sudanese. She is a very strong mother of the nation, and may ancestors bless her." Dada Law in Bidibidi says, "Tanza, the issue of South Sudan is too contradictory to talk to a reasonable being. Sometimes the government does admit its failure. As the Vice President Rebecca said during the summit, and a common man on the ground is only allowed to dance any type of music, play it without asking any question in regards to when the music ends." Moses Manuel Deng from Juba, South Sudan says, "I don't know why the cases of people taking over wives of lost boys in East Africa is becoming like this. These lost boys should stop taking their wives to East African cities. Otherwise, they will always end up losing their wives to other people. Africans believe by seeing." And finally, James Roy Majok from Unity State in Bantu Town says, "Hi VOA News in Focus. Floods devastated many homes and several farms across Unity State, Bantu generally. Thanks goes to Honorable Governor of Unity State, Dr. Joseph Nguyen Mun Twil, for working hard to alleviate the suffering of innocent civilians of Unity State from flooding. I also thank partners who are working hard together with Unity State authorities for helping innocent civilians who are being affected by flooding. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate your comments. Keep them coming."
Keep those comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the right to read your brief comments every Friday. We now leave you with Emerson and the song Tutu Party.
Watch like a bottom seven die.
We have been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. I am John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Deserves a body, every man deserves a lady. Come to the party, oh no. Come jam, shake your body. Come show me, say you savvy.